You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5.
I do have an interview to be conducted this morning, and we are about to chat now with Paul Daniel Nahas, law enforcement consultant, firearms, the subject matter expert. Good morning to you, Paul. It's good to chat with you again. Good morning.
Good morning. You hear me clearly?
Hearing you loud and clear.
Thank you very much for having me again. Apologies for not being in studio this morning.
That's okay. I understand. Right? I understand. As we kick off our discussions this morning, a lot is surrounding the guns and ammunition that is currently on the streets in the hands of persons who we don't know. The breach. I now hear a report that the vault supposed to have two keys by two persons in charge of the station, and they both opened at the same time. And
No. Very untrue. Definitely untrue.
So share some insight or any that you may have pertaining to this issue.
All right. I mean, I have a lot of comments to make, and it's a matter of where do I start with what went on. First of all, I really have to thank the powers that be in terms of their response to it. I mean, this is being addressed in the most critical way, which it should be, because this is a very serious situation. I mean, you have I'm not going to draw a distinction between TTPS and municipal police in this way, that a police station was breached, attacked. You know, they were saying some saying it's an inside job. Some I believe, if I'm not mistaken, two officers are in custody, as well as four others. A number of firearms and a quantity of ammunition is now in the hands of criminals, which the police are trying to track down. And I don't really have any doubt that majority of that, those arms, ammunition, at least the arms themselves, maybe not the ammunition, not all of it, but it's easier to get rid of the ammunition to pass it off. But the arms themselves, I'm sure that most of them will be recovered just because of the kind of attention it's gotten, and the manner of disposal of those arms in terms of how they would have to sell them or distribute them to the criminal element. It's bound to show up in areas where the police would have their informants, where gangs probably would not want that kind of heat on their gang, because once that comes down on them, it hampers their other operations. So in terms of that type of robbery, while it was planned out in some kind of almost movie-esque type of way, it's the practical. The practicality of this now is that, and the reality is that it's going to be a lot harder to move those arms than the persons probably thought.
And this is what I was getting. And this is what I wanted to tell some. I told somebody this morning on the radio. I said the persons involved in the underworld and these type of things, they don't want that. Those weapons.
No, that's heat.
That heat, they don't want that. That is interfering with their smooth operation in terms of their drug peddling, whatever they're doing, illegal. And that's unnecessary. So if one of these guys decide to go into the camp with TTPS rounds and gun and stuff like that, and the TTPS get a whisper that that's inside it, that's going to interfere with operations.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put it this way. It's very easy for the police, once they have any kind of idea of where it might be, of any people affiliated or so. Remember this, the TTPS has a lot of intel. Not necessarily evidence, they have intel. And you can't charge somebody, convict somebody on intel. However, especially during this time with a state emergency more than ever, you can create an environment for gangs, such as using preventive detention orders, such the searches, you can actually, or police can actually search any person or conduct any kind of search if they suspect their arms and ammunition involved, if they have good reason to suspect that, without warrant. So it's very simple that, all right, we have the intel, this intel, no problem. The block is locked down. The entire block is locked down. You can't push an ounce of marijuana on the corner. The block is locked down. And that interferes with those gang operations. And some gangs, especially those who are operating, I don't want to say under the radar, but in a manner in which the police don't have reason to crack down on the whole gang, or they're not going to pour those resources. When police firearms become a factor in that, you're going to get a lockdown. They're going to put pressure on, and you know what? Maybe not even on the gang that is quote unquote perpetrating it or has it, but hey, what? This area, everyone locked down until somebody speaks.
And that's the problem. That is why, in my poll question, I would believe that the police have the ability, resources, skills, and know-how to retrieve every single one of those guns. They can get
most
it
definitely.
Back. Most, they can. No,
and they've gotten 30-something.
Already. I am hearing it was 62 to begin with. And then I got a report unconfirmed. I think it was confirmed as over 100 guns.
I got, on my end, it's been unconfirmed. I'm waiting for that type of confirmation. But it could be. It could possibly. And I expect most of them to be retrieved because, as we be discussing that, that is that's a difficult product to move. A police gun may not be a hard thing to move. 100 police guns is very hard to move, and gangs are going to be on the lookout because all of the weapons will be marked TTMPS, standing for Trinidad and Tobago Municipal Police Service. They'll have a mark on it.
Yeah, and so, not only that, it made me wonder if they were trying to, if these guns had some kind of link to trafficking overseas, maybe to take it overseas, put it in a pirogue, get it out of the country. I don't know. And then
had a sell even.
Right. And then speaking with an officer, I can't call names, but I spoke to an officer yesterday who shared a slightly different approach on it. He said, Davey, I'm being real with you. You can't call my name, but I'm telling you, I am of the impression when we look at certain things that this was done because some big boy or some police somewhere else in some other jurisdiction trying to cover up something and needed to get something to cover something. So I don't know. I say, but even if that narrative makes sense to what you telling me yesterday afternoon, why kill the woman? If it is you just came there to get the arms and ammunition, why kill the police woman?
I would ask this in terms of covering up another, when he said another jurisdiction, he meant locally?
Locally. Maybe
yeah,
another
well, I mean,
area.
Again, all of those guns marked, all of them have ballistics on them. It's honestly...
No, but the wrongs. Maybe we could...
I cannot confirm whether or not the Trinidad Tobago Municipal Police in that station, whether the wrongs were marked or not. I can't confirm that. And it's a matter, well, you know, if things were being stolen to cover up or so, again, the arms, I mean, I don't know if it was greed, but the arms would bring a kind of heat that just doesn't make sense. And you're talking about even shipping it somewhere away. If you're talking about that, you're talking about transit costs because crime is a business.
It is.
So it's a high profile heist. You're putting it, you're taking it somewhere else. I just don't see it feasible financially to do that.
And I understand that. Eh? I have a call coming through. Hello, good morning.
If you want, I guess my opinion is I believe something bigger already was going to happen. And I believe them guns before that Sunday. I feel certain guns was not counted for when you really check and balance. And that woman will have talked. That WPC was going to talk and call names. I believe that's my opinion. Hold it on.
The thing about it, go ahead, Paul.
I would say this. I can't rule it out. I mean, they don't have evidence as to that, but what the gentleman said is not something that you could necessarily rule out. You know, it's a lot of speculative stuff. He would have said something that is... there's no information confirming that, but there's a lot of possibilities, and you can't rule out any possibilities right now because there's such a lack of evidence as to what really took place.
The thing about it is, I see it as senseless, baseless, useless. As you said, it's difficult, and no criminal enterprise once that heat. Paul, in me talking to certain persons, I was even reliably informed that if some, let's say, you remember they used to have a police vehicle parked up by the tree, if you're going up the bus route heading east, by Success Laventil School there.
Yeah.
They would have a static, what they call a static. Sometimes even by the Beetham, by the gas station, or a little higher up, they will have a static.
Yeah.
And they would, correct, and that static will have two officers in the vehicle at any point in time, right? And I'm thinking they like sitting ducks. If Batman and criminals so dread out here, why not run up to the police, blaze up the tail, take their weapon and blaze out because they're always sending a message? And somebody said to me, they can't do that. They would not do that. Reason being, they go on the beat them there. and they do that. You remember police have intel and some allegiance and alliance. Well, I don't want to use the word allegiance, but they have some kind of, they know criminals, they know persons. And when the ground start a shake and the bad man in the area, Paul, hear what's going on. You see that sharpness you do, you got to take the heat for it. Yeah. They will belch you out and burp you out to the police and let you know you have to. Or they kill everybody in your family. You ain't want that, so you had to go and sit down in the prison. They go same thing for you. But you're taking the heat. They're giving up somebody. Yeah. Somebody in the group had to go because of that stupid thing that took place. And they don't want the enterprise. So the stealing of these weapons and taking it away. I mean, before you, I have a next question to ask you, but let me hear this call quickly. Good morning.
Morning, Davey. Who in charge are the keys to open the vault? You can ask yourself that?
Well, I was hoping. Okay. I think that was a question I wanted to ask.
Sure.
The
strong room, right? Or whatever.
The strong room. For the armory, yeah.
Whatever term you want to use for it. You know, usually the head would probably have a key fit, but the person who is issuing the firearms or keep up the whoever is assigned to as a custodian of that property on that shift would have keys to access it. So there will be keys in there because you don't know the situation in terms of, first of all, there has to be the handover of firearms, and the person who receives the key in the morning has to go through the logs and make sure things are accounted for, and they have to issue the firearms also too. In the event there's some type of emergency and officers are called out or so, they have to be able to access and issue those firearms quickly. So there would be a key assigned to the senior officer on duty at that.
But isn't a situation like a bank vault where two persons have a key and both are let to push put together?
No.
Right.
Look, David, let me reel about this, right? And I'm saying this straight out because not to compromise anything, but when I was working for TTPS, one of my assigned roles was to inspect their armories and order their armories across the entire country, and I would have seen everything from some incredibly secure vaults and doors to a regular wooden door with a key on it or a padlock on it. I would have seen everything in terms of that. So now the San Fernando City Corporation, I've never checked their vaults. I don't know exactly how they have it stored, but at the same time, there has to be access to it by the officer on duty, and somebody is responsible on shift for the keys. Usually it will be either a more senior person or somebody assigned to it specifically.
Wow, this is incredible. Good morning. Hello, good morning. All right, 625-2257. Let me check the WhatsApp because a lot of persons trying to get in this morning and share their thoughts.
Morning, Davey. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, and I think it's still in the newspaper today.
Paul, you're hearing, right?
There's a new gang, and it's not really a new gang. They've been around for a while now, and it's called the PCC gang. And they originated in Brazil, and they've grown now. They're the largest transnational drug cartel in the world. And what they're doing is they're not like the drug cartels of Mexico or Colombia. These guys are cocaine militias. They don't have flashy cars or flashy clothes. They don't have big houses. They infiltrate foreign governments. They can have connections with the police, with real estate developers.
Okay, I thought you had a question. I was waiting for the question. But hello, good morning. Just a comment. Good morning.
Good morning, Davey.
Quickly.
And good morning to Mr. Nahus. I think that it is early days yet in the investigation, but from what the Commissioner of Police revealed yesterday, I am looking at this that there's a possibility that this may have been a crime of passion and perhaps the guns removed in order to cover up what exactly had taken place. If it is true that colleagues of the woman corporal were involved in this, then whatever happened may have not started on Saturday night. It may have started quite some time ago. And it's possible also that guns may have been walking out of there for quite some time, and all sorts of things may be happening. I think that there has to be a thorough investigation on this matter to know exactly what took place. And we have to look very carefully as to how we recruit and train even municipal police officers, because I don't think they go through the same rigors at St. James Barracks as the other police officers do. So all of these things have to be taken into consideration. Recruit, train, constant testing and all of that, because these are persons armed with guns walking on the road. I listen to your comments.
You talk about training, recruitment.
So first of all, I don't want to go into conspiracy theory. No one is going to... I would say this. It's very unlikely that somebody is going to steal an entire armory for a crime of passion to cover that up. That, because it was a highly coordinated effort, right? It was a very highly coordinated effort. And as a matter of fact, it's more likely that the murder occurred as a byproduct of the robbery than the other way around. That's one. Two, I do agree entirely that the municipal police, as well as the TTPS, this is not just municipal police, the recruitment needs to be looked at, some of the training, as well as the monitoring and such afterwards. There needs to be some type of reform in that. The municipal police do go through a lot of training. They are trained by some of the same officers that train the TTPS, and they have their own training. I won't say they have their own training school for that, and they do a very good job of training them. It's not that they're under-trained. That is not the issue. However, I do think recruitment and monitoring are still very, very important and areas that need to be improved upon.
You know, the thing about it is, I remember was chatting with someone on that recruitment. People talk about, I don't believe the TTPS will go on bringing corrupt individuals. They normally put out pictures in the public, on the papers.
And they investigate.
They investigate. So persons come into the police service, persons come into the armed forces, the TTDF, the Coast Guard and all these things. As I say, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. They come in there and they're normal. But somewhere along the lines, as I was speaking to officers yesterday, they get demoral. They feel a sense of demoralization. They don't feel a sense of will to continue the job. Their salaries isn't the best and most attractive in the world. Outside of that...
I can't comment on that. Because several persons that over the course of my career that I know personally would have come and could have recommended, would have come, and I would have done recommendations for them for TTPS, for TTDF, for different organizations. Right. And I'm telling you that each person I have recommended, I don't think I've ever recommended someone. I didn't receive a call from a police officer identifying themselves and saying that they're an investigator assigned to ask some questions. And some would ask 10 questions. Some would keep on the phone for half hour asking about the person, about how I know them, about how they grew up, different things. And to see also, too, if I actually know the person. And, you know, I appreciate that level of in-depth investigation, especially for TTPS.
Thank you for sharing that.
But I would say I agree with you entirely that somewhere along the line, sometimes officers become despondent, some things happen. Sometimes they've seen corruption, they can't do anything about it.
And, that's it.
You know, it ends up as that. So monitoring is important.
No, not only that. This is what I was also reliably informed. When I asked about, I told the person, I said, heavy conversation because they are very avid listeners. Some of the police officers that listen to this program, they want to talk, but they can't talk because they're not authorized to speak on behalf of the TTPS.
So, and that shows you, that shows you that some of them are afraid to talk.
They are.
Because of what they see going on inside. So that shows you these good officers are being constrained in the service.
Listen, and the man said, also, Davey, while you're talking about, I heard you yesterday mention about police service reform, police reform, and there's this guy who's called every morning. He said, what about judicial reform? He said, Davey, I held a boy in school uniform. He said, I went into a school to check on a sibling that the teacher called me. I went in there, and while in the school, you know, they don't always wear the police uniform, so they have like tees with the police logo. But he said, while he's in the school, treating with a matter with the teacher, he's noticing a student a little uneasy. Because another officer was around, and you know, everybody's watching, you're walking the school, you're just watching the children. And he said, this one person stood out to him in the corner of his eye, but he ain't alarming the student. He said, and when he go to approach the student play walking like to the block or something and drop a small bag. He pick up the bag and grab the student, identify himself as a police officer, and searching the contents of the bag, he found 16 packets of compressed marijuana. 16 on the school compound. And a knife stuck in the boy's waist. He said, I can't put handcuffs on him. I have to get an ununiformed police officer to come and deal with it. I have to get an unmarked police car to come in to deal with it. I cannot use... He said, Davey, I take all the boxes are
he
right.
To contract, he have to contact our agency in police or one of the department. There's a long list.
He said he went through it. They held the young boy in some support youth, something he called it, where you could arrest him and that way you had to put him, right?
Yeah.
Some area is not right. He talked about that. And he also...
You can't put them with prisoners. There's rules with children.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a long-winded process. He right went to court thing. He said, Davy, and within a week, a few days, maybe 2 or 3 days after he went through all of that, buy the book, he said, buy the book. That child is in school worse than he left him. And now he's in the school, back in school, with a pip on his shoulder because there's a rank to get arrested, and he's now getting reports that the child is even worse in his behavior, his mannerism, as opposed to when he was held with the 16 packet of marijuana. He said that court case is still going on. So the child is, the 16-year-old is released as the court case. He's on bail, case going on, and he's reoffending continuously. He said when we as police officers hold a criminal, they have more rights than us. And he said when a police go through all of that, and then we put evidence and we might forget one little thing. A smart lawyer coming in, the judiciary, bam, we get tossed out, we get the case dismissed or the person held. They say the police incompetent. He say we have so much of a burden to get everything correct. And when we see we jump down in a drain, nearly twist my ankle to hold up on, and then he get bail, gone back and reoffending. How I feeling to go and run down them criminals, boy?
So judicial reform, some of it has begun to take place. It needs to take place in a very big way. And one thing they have to have provisions for is that while we understand the whole concept and the laws regarding children, the thing is a lot of children are committing adult offenses knowing that their children, their maturity level is not that of your average 14-year-old, 13-year-old. It's not. They have an adult criminal mindset, and there needs to be reform to deal with the adult criminal mindset and actions of children. So, for example, if you just take it to another extreme and go to a country where they are taking child soldiers from 12, 13 years old, you have someone with a rifle shooting and killing people.
Exactly.
It's a different mentality. And in Trinidad, the gangs are actively grabbing these young fellas. Because he pushing there. You think where he getting that marijuana? Exactly. You think he growing up in his house?
He ain't growing up. Hello, good morning.
Davy, a pleasant good morning once more. Davy,
quickly, yeah.
When I said earlier that the two senior officers have the keys and they go together, I spoke about Chaguanas Borough Corporation. That's how it's done. So if anybody want to rebut that, up to yesterday and before I made this statement this morning, I verified that with a police corporal, a woman corporal from Chaguanas Municipal. And the thing is that, what I'm hearing here is amazing. So there are no checks and balances when the handing over takes place and so on. I find that very, very strange.
No. Karini Central, there are checks and balances. Very often. At every handover.
Because I worked in the police service doing that. Then it should have been identified before that guns were missing, or is it that all went one time?
All went one time.
That's very interesting.
That's it.
Yeah. Thanks. Good morning. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Davy.
Good morning, Princess Tom.
And to your guest, Princess Tom. Good morning, listeners.
Good morning.
Mr. Davy, first of all, the Prime Minister, when she made her comment about Trinidad and Tobago being lawless and she was under a lot of pressure and so on, I think she must feel a sense of exoneration now. And it is something for us to take note of, Mr. Davy. This problem, yes, we are all alarmed and all excited and so on about the municipal in San Fernando. But this is a problem, Mr. Davy, that has been brewing in Trinidad and Tobago for years now. I have to go back to Dr. Morgan Job.
Could you make the point quickly, please? Point system, the time is going. You have a question for our guest?
I would like to just ask your guest if he thinks that this matter is beyond constables and corporals. There's some big fish in this matter, and we need to get not to the bottom, but to the top of it.
Okay.
Thank you, Prince.
Thank you.
This does not seem like any kind of big fishing, honestly. This seems like some fellas at a lower level got a bright idea that they thought was bright, then realized it wasn't bright, and now they're going to have to realize how unbright it really was. I would say as well, I don't think the Prime Minister feels exonerated. I think she feels very concerned about what's going on. And this has been, I agree with you guys, it's been a problem for years, Bring. I've spoken about it. This is my second term as an alderman. And I'm telling you from a security perspective, from a borough perspective now, that, you know, it's an issue. The municipal police needs a type of reform. And I'm not going to give out any information or compromise security, but the Diego Martin borough, the mayor spoke with the ASP of police by us. And I am very reliably informed that additional measures, along with the TTPS, have been taken to make sure the Diego Martin Borough Corporation firearms and ammunition are fully secured and guarded at all times by an adequate force.
Exactly so. Hello, good morning.
When the check and balance, here's the thing. When the check and balance is going on, is it on camera? This inventory is stock taken, is it on camera? And how they could say the arm always went one time? It's already gone. Nobody knew.
I mean, let me tell you something. It's like a security handover. When I come in to take up duty, you have to tell me, you have to write everything in your diary, in the station diary, about in the book in the armory, what you leave.
They have a separate book for the armory. And not one officer alone. The officers have to check it, and every month it's supposed to be audited and returned, sent back and such.
That's right. So every handover shift, I have another police brethren who works in the armory.
Let's just say weapons were going over time, right? Let's just say that. How the police were armed in San Fernando, because the police have to be actively armed. They have a reserve of weapons. But the police at San Fernando City Corporation, the city corporations have a much higher manpower. Now, manpower is a massive issue with municipal police, and that needs to be addressed. But the city corporations tend to have a high level of manpower compared to anywhere else in terms of municipal policing.
That's good. My final question to you as we wrap the interview this morning. Recently, we had a murder that took place, a domestic murder, where one person, wife, took the life of another in self-defense after a six-hour ordeal of domestic terror, allegedly in a house. Now, persons were saying on the program that why should a husband and wife both have a licensed firearm? And I wanted to know from you, from your learned position.
I didn't realize a husband and wife become Siamese twins and are always together.
Thank you. That's one.
And are always.
Right. And what about one person owning having multiple firearm users license? Like two or three guns.
Well, in terms of the multiple guns, nothing is wrong with that. They have different guns for different purposes. Some are better suited for home defense. Some are better suited for carry, depending on if you're wearing a suit, if you're wearing a jersey.
Ah.
Some people are competitive shooters as well, who have their carry gun, have their competition weapons. Some people hunt as well, so they have their gun for safety, and then they have their gun that they take to hunt. There's a lot of different reasons, and if somebody's capable of securing a weapon, they're capable of securing more than one weapon. So, when there's a concern about, I was always stated about, danger to safety of the public. Somebody has 5-6 guns. Someone could break in and steal it, and there's a danger to the public. If it's reasonably secure, it's not a problem. As we see, 100 guns could go missing from a police station, right?
Yep. Well said. So, with that being said, I mean, how long does it take when an incident happens? Now, I know it's subjected to the circumstances surrounding the incident, but when you have one firearm, one user's license, and you defend yourself one time with this gun, doesn't the police take away the gun?
In majority of the time, there's a level of discretion by TTPS. However, so the head of division can allow you to keep the weapon. The police very often take it. Criminals know this as well, and that's another reason for having more than one gun too. And it's not just unique to Trinidad. In other jurisdictions and the states, I mean, it's easier to get a gun in the states as a solicitor, it's all right. And in the U.S., for example, the same thing happens a lot of times where the police will take the gun. I don't think it's entirely necessary, and I have written a policy regarding that years ago that wasn't implemented, whereby it's not necessary, because you have the ballistics. If you have the person saying that, yes, I shot this person in self-defense, I discharged this weapon, the ballistics match. Take a picture of the gun, take a picture of the license, and if anything further, if there's no further reason for investigation into a homicide and you're ruled as self-defense, I don't see any reason the person's weapon should be taken.
Yeah, because you render the person defenseless when they have paid their money and applied for this weapon, especially business persons and whoever.
That's now an additional threat.
That's an additional threat. So that's a reason, and I think we need to look at. Paul, I need to speak with you beyond the radio. I'll probably give you a call later on this afternoon.
No problem.
I thank you very much for chatting with me very early this morning. I know you didn't have your coffee yet. I had mine earlier. So make sure and get a coffee.
Yeah, the caller didn't realize that, and he was a little dangerously close to getting told that I'm done hearing.
But we control it. So thank you so much, Paul, for chatting with me this morning, and we will be in touch. I have your number. I'll give you a call. Thank you again so much.
No problem, David.
Have a great one.
Great to be on air again.
Yeah, man. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Mm-hmm.
You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5.